Welcome to This Week in Money. I'm Jim Goddard. Today, Ross Clark from chartsandmarkets.com runs down the major markets. Stocks had a bouncy ride but ended the week in a positive space. Gold is starting to get toppy, but silver still seems to have some room to go higher. Ross also looks at crude and uranium and has a special offer for our listeners. One of Canada's most successful real estate agents, West Vancouver's Alan Mark Angel, tells us he has never seen such a poor market for the country's most expensive detached homes. He says there was optimism when Trudeau resigned and President Trump was elected, but tariffs have thrown cold water over the sale of high-end homes. Car part magnate Frank Stronach, the founder of Magna International, gives us his views on what it would take to get Canada's economy booming again. He thinks the People's Party of Canada has the right ideas to do that. We'll talk to Ross Clark right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com. Welcome to This Week in Money, the source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Ross Clark from chartsandmarkets.com, where you'll find insightful market commentary and timely technical analysis. You can find him on X at Charts by Ross. Welcome back to the show, Ross.
Always a pleasure, Jim.
How would you describe what happened on the stock markets this week?
Well, it was just like we've been having a week of lots of ups and downs, but ended up on a positive note. And, you know, here we are. It was almost 3 weeks ago now that this market bottomed out and that the sentiment was just going through the floor. The support area we got down to in the S&P, the NASDAQ, that part of the long-term channels that we've looked at, so it was a good place for a bounce. There was a pretty good chance for a retest of the low. We did that at the beginning of this week. The markets gave back about 60% of the run-up from that first low that we saw at the beginning of April. So that was the absolute minimum you'd look for on the pullback. And all the major indices, the Dow, the NASDAQ, the S&P, all held just exceptionally well. And, Tuesday through Friday, it was up and away, which looks as though there might be a decent base in place. I really still think there's a chance for maybe one more test of support. But overall, this was a good spot for markets to have had a big clean out. Bond market has stabilized, which is a good thing. You know, remembering that the bond market is 10 times the size of the stock market, so you don't want to see that one falling apart, which it was doing in that first week of April. Bonds have recovered about half of their loss from the spike up that they had about a month ago. So, stability there is good overall. I'd like to see that one. And the Mag 7 stocks coming back from very oversold levels, still a lot of overhead resistance there. And I think people still have to think of this as a transition period, that things that did wonderfully up until December of last year and have started to roll, I still think that's a big unwinding process. There are better places to be and stocks that have got decent dividends on them are probably worth looking at. Things like the healthcare are worth looking at as well.
What's going on with gold?
Well, gold, it's been making that big run. Our target was 33.36, which we established 5 years ago, and that was exceeded a week and a half ago. We got marginally close to 3,400, but the excesses on the upside were really starting to look like a lot of previous interim highs. And of real significance here, the U.S. dollar index has been eroding away since the first week in January. We were at 110 on the U.S. dollar index. It got down to 98 as of this week and have stabilized down here. Now, the the manner in which it declined on the dollar is really an anomaly. We have an exhaustion index that we programmed in a proprietary one a number of years ago, and it went to extremes that we've only seen five times since the 1970s. Each one of those was an interim high for gold. So the signal kicked in the early part of this week, the reversal that we've seen the last few days as we've gold has lost momentum is part of what I think will be a consolidation correction. When the spike up in gold is as much as this one was, the corrections tend to be very deep. And the very first thing you look for, absolutely every one of them, the gold corrections came back to at least the 50-day moving average. So that gives us a bit of running room on the downside before we might want to look for a decent bounce. We have some lower targets depending upon how this market corrects in here. But the stability in the dollar and you know what you're seeing in the other currencies reversing off their highs takes the steam, say, out of the gold market. You know, on a related basis, silver, which had really come to life this week, you know, it had gone from, what, $29 up to $33.50. That one at the end of the week looks as though it's getting a little tired, too. We have some big patterns on the silver market that we're looking at levels that will be considered a catalyst for a move on the upside. Those have not been triggered yet. So, you know, what we're looking at, really since, you know, last year, we've been stuck between $28 and $30 an ounce on silver. Once this thing does kick in with the signals we're looking at, I think you're looking at probably $50 plus, but you're going to have patience because I'd rather be getting on board as things look as though they're ready to move. And for all that, there are a few things out there right now that say might be on the horizon. It's not quite prime for in prime time right yet.
What's going on with crude?
Another one that has, that one has stayed pretty darn quiet. Got down to $58, which was very oversold with absolutely everything else at the beginning of April. The bounce there, pretty mediocre. We only got back to $64 this week. And, the lows for the last 6-8 months have all been around the $66 range. I look at my chart here, maybe half a dozen times. We bounced off just 66. Right now, we're having trouble even getting back there. So looks as though that one's still got a fair amount of overhead in it.
What's going on with the Canuck buck?
Canadian, we've got some pretty good short-term sell signals up in here. The move topped out momentum-wise about 10 days ago. Hasn't done anything. We were stuck around 72. The crude oil in terms of resistance, the Canadian dollar had the previous support at 72. So this run up here is really testing the lows that we saw April and July of last year. The intermediate signals would suggest that we could pull back into the maybe 71, just a shade underneath that. So if anything, the dollar, you know, we look at it compared to crude oil and the CRB index, Commodity Research Bureau index, you look for divergences. So at the bottom in February and March, as the Canadian was bottoming out and putting in a higher low, the CRB and the oil market just continued right down. So that was a good bullish divergence, which then became a catalyst as we moved through 70 cents and put on the run to 72. Well, where we are right now, there's no divergence up here. This dollar is still looking reasonably good. So a pullback and then another run to the upside. We'll just see how much strength there is in a secondary run after the pullback.
Anything going on with uranium?
Yeah, the some of the big name stocks and the ETFs got what we call a downside capitulation here just in the last week or so. Things like the Sprott Junior Ream ETF bottomed out with capitulation at 11.5. It's back to 15 and change today. You're seeing the same things in Denison. You're seeing them in the UR Energy. So some of these stocks look as though they've had their big washout. They're back to their 50-day moving averages. And, you know, I think uranium is something for the future, big time. And if these stocks want to give back maybe 50 or 60% of their first rush off the bottom, and they're up to their 50-day averages right now, so there should be some resistance right now. But if they give back maybe a 50 or 60% and start to base, that could be looked at as a good long-term position.
And, Ross, do you have a special offer for our listeners?
Yep, it's 25% off for new subscribers, and you'll find the link on our homepage at chartsandmarkets.com.
Ross, thank you so much for being on This Week in Money.
Thanks, Jim.
My guest has been Ross Clark from chartsandmarkets.com. Find him on X at Charts by Ross. Coming up, Alan Mark Angel next on This Week in Money.
Always consult your investment professional before making any investment decision. This Week in Money is archived online at talkdigitalnetwork.com.
Welcome back. My guest is Alan Mark Angel, one of the top realtors in Canada. He has sold more than 4,000 properties. He's located in West Vancouver and online at theangelgroup.com, theangell group.com. Alan, welcome back to This Week in Money.
Thank you, sir.
How were the first quarter sales for Greater Vancouver?
Well, it's a nightmare. So I want to start off by just having a chat with the audience here, and so they have an idea of what is going on. In August of last year, I used to do 14 areas, but Whistler has two different boards, so I cut it down to 13. So at the end of August last year, 13 areas were having the worst 8 months ever. So it looked like last year was going to be the worst year of all time. By the end of December, only three had the worst, so it ended up being the third worst year. And so I try to think, well, why in the slow months, you know, November, December, two of the slowest months, December is by far the slowest, how could we have picked up six areas, gone from the worst to the third worst? And the only thing I could think of, well, two things have happened. Trudeau decided he's going to resign, and Trump won the election down there. And I could tell the difference in the attitude of just people coming in the open house, and their attitude was a lot more positive. I remember I had an apartment, my self apartment for sale. It was a 5.9. I never got any more than two or three people in there. All of a sudden, with Trump winning the election down there, I had a weekend of 16 groups, and then next week, 14 groups in there. I've never had that in my career. So I started the year thinking, okay, it should be fine. We only have three having the worst year. That's good. It's a lot better than the last few years. So I expected the market was going to be okay. What I didn't expect was Trump was going to put on the tariffs, and that everybody is so uncertain. And that's what boggles my mind, because you look at the last 3 years, it'd be the second, third, and fourth worst, not just with West Vancouver. I'm talking all over the place, all areas. So you think of it, since 2018, which was the worst year ever, since 2018, the 7 years, we've had the five worst years since I've been a real. MLS started in 1980. So we've had the five worst years in history. Now, we had Trudeau here, and we had Biden in the States, and it was just a total mess. So five worst years in the last seven. So, but I was optimistic to start the year. Now with the tariffs in there, I did the sales to the end of March, January to the end of March, and March specifically. March, individual sales in March are just unbelievable. Westfan averages 73 sales in March. They had 18. Vancouver West averages 166, and they had 50. So we have nursing like that. All the areas, of the 13 areas I do now, all had the worst March of all time, except Squamish had 19. That's a smaller than 19, and the worst was 17. Every other one was just horrible. Greater Vancouver to the end of March at 499 sales. The average is 1803. The worst 3 months in history is 717, so that's how bad it is. So I'm trying to speculate what's going to happen now. And April's going to be exactly the same. So I am hoping that Trump's tariff things, it's 90-day things, that if he gets it's fixed as the way he wants to, which is, I have no way of knowing that, but if it does, I'm sure we'll have a real surge in the market. If not, we're going to have a huge problem. Because I can just tell, with holding open houses, the attitude of the people, they would like to buy. I mean, I go away thinking, oh, that person liked it. That person liked it. But they're not buying, so they're sitting back waiting and waiting. So the news as it is as bad as you can get. Market just plummeted because of those things. But if Trump wins and is successful in these things, then I think you're going to find a real turnaround, because people need to buy houses. And when you're doing 17, you got 785 realtors in West Vancouver. And for a total, we had 26 in January, 26 in February, 18 in March, and we're at 17 right now. So you're going to have 80 sales in 4 months for an area that has 785 realtors in it. So right now, it's as dreary as it could be, but I'm one of these guys, my glass is always half full at least. I think Trump will come through in a lot of ways, and the attitude will change. So I'm praying that we'll have a big change, hopefully starting in June. But it's a shame the best 2 months of the year have gone and have turned into the worst 2 months of all time. That's what the market is doing. Apartments aren't quite as bad as that. I do four apartment areas, Greater Vancouver. Greater Vancouver had 612 apartments sold at the end of March. The worst is 947. The average is 1711. And there'll still be probably a couple more come in to the, so West Bend was the only area that was lower than the worst year. North Vancouver was 110 compared to the worst 78. Vancouver West 375 compared to the worst 181. So the apartment market isn't as bad. But as I said, this can't last because too many people are dying to buy houses. So where I'm discouraged with what's going on, but I'm still optimistic it's going to change in a couple of months.
What's happening with the inventory?
Well, the inventory is interesting because the inventory as of the end of March was 452. Okay, 450 in West Van. The average inventory is 392. So we were 60 houses above the average. The highest by March of any time was 515. Now, right now, at this point in April, we're at 509, and the average, the highest is 595. So the inventory has gone up, but it isn't, it isn't that far above the average. So that's probably good, because you go back to all my years. We've had years 625, 630. We've had as high as that, and yet we're still, as of today, at the worst couple of months in history, and only at 509. So the industry, the inventory isn't all that bad.
How are the inventory and sales to listings ratios for high-end homes?
Well, here's where it's a total disaster. When Span has 44 houses over $10 million. We've sold one. Vancouver West has 60 over $10 million. They have zero. In fact, the highest sale in Vancouver West is 6.8. And they have 60 over $10 million and sold zero. So obviously it's affecting the high end more than any place else.
How are West Vancouver waterfront properties selling?
We have 18 for sale and we've sold one.
How are high end West Vancouver properties doing?
Well, over $7 million, let's say over $7 million, we have 86 for sale, we've sold six. And Vancouver West, you got 180 some over seven. You haven't sold one.
How is the condo market doing, especially high end condos?
Well, West Van five. We only have five houses asking over $5 million. We've sold one. Vancouver West is 32 over six. Over six, and the only sale they've had, they've sold one. So, again, the high end is extremely slow.
A number of condo towers are proposed or currently being built in Greater Vancouver. What's happening to pre-sales?
Well, we sold, at the end of last year, we had sold, because I have a couple of offices that do a lot of pre-sales, and that's sold out. It basically sold the buildings out. So right now, I mean, there's just, we have very few for sale. The new projects are just getting started. And so it's too early to say, but I would expect they'll probably be, trying to sell right now. The lower prices might sell, the higher won't.
What's happening to pre-sale condos that are coming due for closing?
Well, I checked with my girl because we had a few hundred closings by the end of the year, and she says they're all doing fine. So far, we don't see the people that are backing out.
At the peak of the market, what were high-end condos selling per square foot, and what are they selling for now?
Well, I mean, to be honest, there hasn't been enough high-end condo sale to establish the change. It will be less for sure, but we haven't seen a major price reduction, which I've been quite surprised at, because with the market being as slow as it has the last 3 years, second, third, and fourth, prices have come down, but not like I've seen a couple of times. It went to half price. That maybe 20% or something, but that's about it.
So far, is the detached market or the condo market the most concerning?
Well, the houses are more concerning. As I said, the houses are all having the worst. In the four areas that I do, only one was having the worst, and that was only four behind the worst. So the condo markets have been holding.
Are home sellers lowering their asking prices?
Yes, we're trying to get them to do that, but I'll tell you, it's a lot of work. I mean, I fight them to change prices, but they still want to sit there and wait and hope.
Are homes selling below the latest BC assessment valuations?
Even that is not quite surprising, because a few years ago we were selling 82% below in West Bend, 82% below assessment. Then we went up to 78% above. So I did I checked through the sales, because assessments were always an idea. It's 50-50 above and below. The big difference was that in West Vancouver, if you're in close Bridge Property, Amazon, down the road, they're selling above. If you live at Horseshoe Bay or Caulfield or something, they're just selling below.
The Bank of Canada held its official rate at 2.75%. What are the latest mortgage rates, and are the banks making it tougher to get a mortgage?
Well, I just had two deals I had sold, both collapsed because they didn't get the funds. I think the banks are just making it harder to qualify because they are concerned about what's going on in the market, too.
We're hearing China's real estate market is having some real challenges. Is that causing more inventory in the high-end homes in West Vancouver?
Yes, without a doubt. The big change in the Chinese market, it's been here a long time, and the Chinese people didn't want to sell their houses. They just bought one, like a Chinese client had owned 32 homes, and she just wouldn't, she wasn't going to sell anything. But now there's as many Chinese homes coming on the market as anybody else, as the Persians and the Europeans, as I call them. So, yes, it's changing the market for sure.
Do you think the tariff wars are going to cause more inventory in the high end?
Yes. I said we've gotten 90 days. Trump keeps saying, well, a meeting with so-and-so, a meeting with so-and-so, everybody else, that we're getting a deal. But so far he hasn't announced anything. So if this is settled in the 90-day period, I think we'll have a different market overnight. If it isn't settled, it won't change.
If foreign buyers were allowed to buy real estate in Greater Vancouver again, would it stimulate the market?
Without a doubt. You look at since that, this has been enforced. Like in the last 3 years, as I said, 2018 was the worst year. And I'm talking since my stats, 1980 MLS started. So, and 1980 was a great market. 1981, it totally crashed. But it's done that a couple of times. But now, with the last 3 years being the second, third, and worst, the foreign buyers have stopped. And yes, if they change that, but you see, the government's always the government. I've never been a fan of the government. A bunch of average individuals become a member of the government, and they do everything wrong. Yes, it stopped the foreign buyers, but the foreign buyers weren't buying the average houses, so it didn't really help the low end, and so the high end is slowed down drastically. But as I said, that's not helping the average buyer.
Are a lot of homes are still owned by investors, and in general, are they buying, selling, or holding?
Well, they're holding right now for sure, because we're all. I mean, it changed so rapidly. As I said, the market just took us a massive drop as soon as Trump put on the tariffs. So the market. So I mean, we all hope that Trump's going to fix it and we're going to be okay. So they don't want to sell right now because there's hardly any buyers around. When I look at 17 sales in April, 18 in March, and the average is, as I said, the average is 73, and it's just amazing to me that's all the sales we get. I mean, the average is, as I said, is 73, and let me just get that on the sheet for you. And you look at West Van, the average is 73, and the best is 104. And the North Van, like 130 is the average. They got 56, and the best is 179. So we're miles away from the best.
In tougher markets like this, do realtors take on listings if the seller wants to list for a price that's way above the market?
Well, I spent at least 20 hours a week analyzing this. No other realtor will do that. They use the board stats. Which, as I said, I've explained a couple of times. I can't use the board stats because, as I said, when it comes to May 1st, they'll say, here's the sales for the month of April. Well, they're not the sales for the month of April. They look at the deals handed in. They count those because, every deal now is subject for 2 weeks at least. So all half the month, they're not even firm until May. So those don't count. They don't put those into April. That's why I wait till the 21st of the month, so I know then that all the sales will be in. I always use December as a good example. The average in December was 33 sales. On January the 1st, the board said 31 sales. So all the realtors got that. Two below the average. When you analyze the sales, only 17 were done in December. And there was 32 reports. So all the others were from October, November, but weren't handed in. They just count the deals, and no matter what month they were done. So that's a misleading. You know, every realtor did. They used to give me hell because my stats would never be the same as the realtors. The office. Well, why are you doing that? I said, well, if you guys are too lazy to do the real stats, that's fault. It's not mine.
It sounds like it's a buyer's market for homes, but the buyers aren't buying. If anyone needs to sell, what do they need to do to attract buyers?
Well, price is always the best thing. The problem is, yes, they put it on for a price. There's still a good, there's still buyers out there. So it's still, there's still a good chance to sell. But the fact of the matter is, how do I advise you if you're my client and I say, listen, Jim, let's drop the price and it'll sell. But there's a chance in maybe July or August the market could start skyrocket, but certainly go up at a rapid rate. So nobody wants to drop the price. That's the reason they're holding on for Trump's tariffs to see if it works. So it's the worst, it's the most unlikely thing that's ever happened in my career, but it makes sense. And now we got an election for us, and honest to goodness, Trudeau, I couldn't stand. His party, I couldn't stand. If Carney wins here again, then our country's had it for a longer time. So, but it's a tough, but, I'm doing this for a selfish reason. I want to sell a lot of houses, but I want my clients, the people that own houses, to go up in price. Because if Trump fails and there's a total mess in the States, we're going to have a real correction here. And that's what we don't need. So everybody's sitting back right now, waiting. Do I unload? Do I not unload? Rents are still extremely high. I can't get over. I sold a little apartment at only 800 in North Vancouver, 822 square feet, which is, very tiny. And they rented for $4,400 a month. That's a lot of rent for a young couple to pay. So investors will probably hold because they're getting real good rents.
Alan, where can people follow you and contact you?
Well, Angel Hasbin is the name of the company, but the easiest way, just send me an email, alanmarkangel@gmail.com. Alan, A-L-L-A-N, Mark, M-A-R-K, Angel, A-N-G-E-L-L, @gmail.com. And guys, I am very bored. I have nothing to do except my stats. I'm looking for houses to sell. And you can tell the way I report things. I'll tell you the truth about it because the realtors are afraid to tell the people the truth because they may not get the listing. There are realtors that just take some of the best realtors. They don't care what price they put on. They take the house. They sign it up for 12 months hoping that the guys will change the price. And that has always concerned me. I see that so much. Because I know when I'm in competition with one of the top guys, I ask who it is. And I say, oh, God, he's going to win a lot higher than I am. But generally, I'm almost right about where it sells. So, and my phone number, 778-888-7474. 888-7474. And as I said, I'm putting a house on tomorrow, I think, in White Rock with one of my realtors out there. So I'll work with Ruby Realtors in my office as I go for there because this is my life. I love this job. I hate having to watch what's going on. But I don't believe it's going to last very long. Thank you, Kyle. Okay, Jim.
Alan, thank you so much for being on This Week in Money.
Thank you, Kylie. Okay. Bye-bye.
My guest has been Alan Markangel, one of the top realtors in Canada. He was speaking to us from West Vancouver, British Columbia. Coming up, Frank Stronach next on This Week in Money.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com. This Week in Money is archived online at talkdigitalnetwork.com.
Welcome back. My guest is Frank Stronach, founder of Magna International, one of the largest companies in Canada. He's a strong supporter of Maxime Bernier, the leader of the People's Party of Canada. Frank, welcome to This Week in Money.
Okay, it's great to be with you, and it's always great to talk about money.
Magna International has been just a giant success story. You're the founder. What did you do right that made Magna the huge success that it is?
Well, basically, when when we take a look, society came a long way from the caveman to the hunted to the kings and the servants, and now we have disgruntled employees. Now we have got bosses and disgruntled employees. So the reason I think I treated my employees as partners, and that's why we were so successful.
You're 92 years old, but people don't believe it. You're still working hard. You get things done. What are your secrets to staying young?
I want to correct you. I'm 92 years young, not old.
Okay.
Okay, I put everything in the reverse. Now, if look, sometimes when you get older, you kind of look at life and say, what's the purpose of life, etc. And I came to the conclusion, I would like to see Canada being the first country in the world which would adopt the economic charter part of the Constitution. So that when you have a project, I think that keeps you young and it keeps you motivated and you have a purpose.
You're a strong supporter of Maxime Bernier and the People's Party of Canada. What attracted you to them?
Well, I'm not, keep in mind, I'm non-political, right? And as I said, I like to see the economic charter being part of the Constitution. So we just recommend politicians that would say if they be elected, they would endorse or they would bring forward a motion that the economic charter of rights would be part of the Constitution. So we also, but the problem is the Liberals, the Conservative and the NDP, they're not, the economy isn't high on their agenda. They don't talk about it, how the economy works.
How important is the economy to the success of countries?
But the economy, it's the economy, the economy, the economy. The funny thing is, all politicians and all business people, pretty well all people agree, if the economy doesn't work, nothing else will work. If the economy doesn't work, you cannot feed the hungry. You cannot look after the most fragile people, the elderly, the sick, and the handicapped. The message I want to get across loud and clear is, without workers, you can't make a profit. So it's only fair that they will get a portion. The economy is driven by three forces: smart managers, hardworking employees, and investors. And all three have a moral right to the outcome, which is profits. So the message I want to get across loud and clear is, without workers, you can't make a profit.
Would your economic charter fix Canada's economy and make Canada an economic powerhouse?
It would make Canada an economic powerhouse because it's the economy, the economy. So the message, again, I'm not trying to get across, take away from the rich. I'm saying we must let workers participate in baking the economic pie, and they should get a dancer proportion of that. So everybody will get a bigger slice. So that's the economy would get into motion in an incredible way.
Profit sharing?
Well, profit sharing is the key, right? Without workers, you can't make a profit. When I, in the early 1980s, when I put an economic charter of rights in the Magna Constitution, you know, where it says the employees get 10% of the profits over and above the wages, our profits climbed the first year 40%, the second year 100%, the third year 200%. When you get employees, you know, if you give them a portion in a tangible way, you release an energy of untold proportions. Okay, that's the essence of the economy, that without workers you can't make a profit. So get them involved on the front line. They can see how to make things better, etc., etc. So that's the most important thing.
One observation I had was when WestJet was owned by the employees, they did everything they could to make your trip pleasant and successful. And now that they're just corporate employees, they don't seem to try as hard to make it as nice a flight.
Well, that would hold true just about for everything, right? Look, the employees know the playing fields are not level, the playing fields are catering for the very rich, so they're unhappy. You know, you have, basically we have an environment where we have bosses and disgruntled employees.
Budget deficit projections from the different parties are a key item people should be paying attention to. How do the budget projections of the People's Party differ from the other parties?
Well, the very key is government shouldn't have any debt, right? They must have balanced budgets. Look, every housewife knows she cannot spend more than what her husband brings home. If she spends more, they wind up in a poorhouse. Every farmer knows he cannot spend more money than what he gets for his crop. Otherwise, he loses the farm. Every small business know they cannot spend more than what they make on profits. Otherwise, they go broke. Governments don't. They keep just printing monies. Okay, and the debt is climbing like crazy. You know, what are you going to tell your kids? How are we going to pay back the debt? It's irresponsible.
From a business point of view, would eliminating the deficit be good for business and the economy?
Well, it would be great for people, right? With an economic charter of rights, we could eliminate poverty. That's the very key.
Is there an economic argument for Canada or part of Canada to become the 51st U.S. state?
That definitely, no. Canada should be in its own. I think the United States can have a greater problem, so we would be suckered in on a greater problem. No, I think Canada... Look, Canada has been it's a great country. It's been a great country. We just got too many regulations and too much government involvement. We got, about 65 years ago when they built the first factory in Canada, I'm a tool and die maker by trade. I put on the tool and die making open for business. I didn't need a permit for years. I didn't need a permit. I built one factory after the other, right? I mean, and they were having very few regulations, and everything worked fine. Municipalities were very helpful. If you went to municipality with the building, they looked as a stamp by qualified engineers for snow load, wind load, etc., and say, look, great, go ahead and build the building. We are so happy to build a factory in our town. And now it's lucky. It's regulations, full with regulations. There's more regulators now than there is people which want to make things.
Does mass immigration destroy economies?
Well, mass immigration. I mean, look, it's society can look in nature when you get a species all of a sudden flocking in. It upsets the balance of nature. The same mass immigration will upset the natural environment, right? Look, if all of a sudden, if a million immigrants come in, the system isn't built that we can build a million homes, right? So it doesn't make sense, right? I mean, there's so many things which doesn't make sense.
Does Canada need a Department of Government Efficiency, a DOGE, to eliminate fraud and corruption from government, and would it be good for business?
Yeah, it would be absolutely good for everyone. I wouldn't quite say dodge, but I'm saying we should have hotlines. You know, if people know certain things are not done right, not fairly, not maybe breaking the laws or what, fine, we should have hotlines and flush the things out. That was one of Magnus' key principles. Many, many years ago, I built in a hotline where people could call a number without giving their names if something wasn't right or unfair or not correct, right? And because the most important thing is that you make employees happy and in the country where the citizens, again, the citizens got to know the people, like the country's run fairly, correctly.
Would it be a good economic argument for Canada to join the U.S.?
It would not be a good thing here because, you know, the larger the country, the bigger the problem. The smaller the country, the smaller the problem. And it's a lot easier to handle small problems than big problems. So it's not like, when I got my citizenship, right, in the early 60s, I was a pretty proud Canadian. And I'm still proud to be a Canadian, even though, you know, when we are younger, we all try to hustle to make some money so that they can live in dignity. And I have built over 400 factories in 34 different countries. I could have lived in any one of those countries with dignity. I chose Canada, right? So no, we should. We just got to correct. We cannot leave the politicians handling the economy alone. They cannot handle the economy.
The Canadian government sold off all its gold. If Canada returned to a gold standard, do you think in-ground gold could be used to back the currency?
Well, I don't know. First, you gotta mine it. You gotta melt it. You gotta make sure you there's enough in the ground. But look, it was kind of it was maybe not the right thing to do to sell. I don't know how much gold they sold, but apparently a lot of gold was sold. I think that was a great mistake. Again, it was a thing here. It's cheating the public. Like you sell off what belongs to the people, and you get some monies in, which doesn't, it covers Israel for a little while, and then you get more problems.
Regulations are business killers. How could necessary regulations be kept while the unnecessary ones are terminated?
Well, there was a survey done about a year ago, right, on the regulators, right? There's quite a few countries, but I got three countries in my mind. Canada had 100 regulators or bureaucrats per 1,000 people. The United States had 70 bureaucrats per 1,000 people, so regulators, and Japan had 40 bureaucrats per 1,000 people, right? So we are way, way, way over, right? I think when I opened up the first factory 65 years ago, I think maybe the bureaucracy was maybe 10 people per 1,000, 10 bureaucrats per 1,000 people. Somewhere around 20 bureaucrats per 1,000 people, that should be enough. Okay, we gotta get down. Look, when the first computers came on the market 50 years ago, the slogan was, if you got one of those computers, you could eliminate a total office floor. Now when they look around in the cities, there's 20 times more office buildings. What do you think they do in there? They don't make products. It's regulations, regulations, regulations. They're over-regulated.
Could election rigging or fraud be designed to destroy economies?
Well, we got to take a close look. We got to make sure that it's practically impossible to cheat, right? So I'm not a total expert on that, but it should be analyzed. And I think we need maybe a committee to make sure. Can we improve the election system? And to avoid cheating, I think it's from time to time there should be a qualified committee to take a look and see what can we do to make it very honest.
Do you think we should be concerned about possible election rigging this federal election?
We always got to be concerned about rigging, right? So, but that's why we should from time to time, We should be able to assess and analyze, can we make it better, right? The more modern technology you have, the better you could to create a model where practically cheating is practically impossible, right? So I think we should take a look at it.
The real estate market looks like it could be heading for a significant downturn. How devastating could that be for the economy?
Well, real estate is part of is a section of the economy, right? If the economy is down, and what we have here, it's quite simple, right? When you take a look now, if there's a new building going up, it's a warehouse. It's not a factory. So what we have, we build more and more warehouses. That means basically we have more and more imports. You know, the debt's rising, the imports are rising, the bureaucracy is rising. It's like a freight train going down the hill with no brakes on it.
If real estate takes a significant downturn, is there likely to be job growth in certain sectors?
Well, it's real estate. By real estate, we mainly mean the housing industry. People need homes, et cetera, right? So if that drops, that means how do we house people, right? They sleep underneath the bridges or whatever, right? It's a problem. But that's why the mass immigration upsets the natural structure.
The People's Party platform includes eliminating the deficit within a year and then the capital gains tax. What would that do for the economy?
Well, it's impossible to eliminate the debt within a year. That's not, right? I think it might take 20 years, but we got to have a program that we have balanced budgets and a small portion over the budget, a small portion that we can pay back.
Hearing the political arena in Canada is like a crime scene. Is this perception harming investment inside and outside Canada?
Yeah, well, it might seem maybe that way. I'm not an expert on that. I'm not, but we got to take a look. As I said early on, we need a special committee to overlook the. Can we improve the election, and can we straighten out that business is conducted in a very serious proper way? You know, if you make profits, you gotta pay the tax, etc. So you gotta make. But right now, I think the whole system is slanted towards the rich. Look, all the signs are there that the divide between the very rich and the working class gets bigger and bigger.
Do you see good days ahead for Canada?
Well, we see. We still could, if we would adopt the economic charter of rights, I see with great days ahead. If not, then we have a major problem, right? Because how are we going to pay back the debt? How are we going to, if the economy doesn't work, right? We got to get the people involved. We got to make capitalists out of the workers. Okay, because the socialistic philosophies and communistic philosophies don't work. They're based on wealth distribution. First, you got to create the wealth, otherwise there's nothing to distribute.
As we close the interview, do you have a message for Canadian voters?
Well, the message would be the voters should ask the office-seeking people, if they want to be in parliament, would they support an economic charter of rights? And they only should vote for politicians would say, yeah, I would support the economic charter of rights if I'm elected. It would be very much on the top of the agenda, so the economic charter of rights would be part of the Constitution. Look, it's quite simple to think here. When you take a look at Canada, right, you're not really a free person unless you be economically free. How many people would be economically free in Canada? So let's just create the minimum standards, what we call economically free. The minimum standards would be if a Canadian woman or Canadian man worked for 30 years, they should own at least the house or condo mortgage-free. And they should have at least $300,000 in the bank to support their pension funds so they, in their later years, could choose their own road to happiness. How many people have that? That's a shame. Those are the minimum standards. We created so many new ways of doing things, computers and special machinery, and we're going backwards. So there's definitely something wrong.
Frank, thank you so much for being on This Week in Money.
Okay, let's do it again. More money can get a bigger slice of the economic pie when we do an economic charter of rights. Okay, thank you.
My guest has been Frank Stronach, founder of Magna International, one of the biggest companies in Canada. He's a strong supporter of the People's Party of Canada and its leader, Maxime Bernier. And that wraps up our show for this week. We'd like to thank our guests, Ross Clark, Alan Mark Angel, Frank Stronach, and thank you for listening. If you have any questions for the show or for our guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. I'm Jim Goddard. We'll be back next week with more This Week in Money.
Comments made on This Week in Money are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any manner whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Archived online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. This Week in Money is a production of How Street Media Incorporated. Executive producer is Tom Allen.